You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Very excitingly, we're continuing our Walters chat this morning, and we've got Jess and Simon. Kia ora, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Very good. It's a nice sunny day out there, and it's bringing some sunshine into the studio as well, which is good. So we're speaking about your Walters nomination. Maybe you guys wanted to do a little bit of introduction about your personal practices, and then a little bit about the collaboration too, because Jess, you sort of start with drawing and things as a place.
I've been drawing this kind of parallel realm, I guess, for the last several years. I think pretty intensively since like 2012, and then me and Simon met, I think, in 2013 through a mutual friend, mm-hmm. and since then my solo drawing has all been feeding into our collaborative work, which is the animations and virtual reality artworks. And generally when we exhibit these in galleries and institutions, we'll create these big like immersive environments where the virtual reality or the animations are sort of embedded within mm. them. And then my works on paper might be a component of that as well.
And you are the animation side of things.
So what happened with me? Yeah, so I basically take Jess's drawings and then fill in whatever you don't see behind around the other sides of them and get them moving, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. So not bored of Wellington, but I moved to Melbourne 2013, and just sort of happenstance to have met Jess. We knew of each other's work, and just happened to get working together.
Yeah, we were kind of like, I guess, fans of each other's work before we met in person. Like, yeah. I knew Simon for all the music videos that he'd made for a bunch of New Zealand bands that I liked, mm-hmm. and you knew my drawings. Yeah. But then we had this friend, Rose Salmon. She was working in film with Simon, mm. and she knew about our admiration and put us in touch together. And then Simon came and visited me in Melbourne, and we just started working together immediately.
Well, it's a very productive collaboration. The work that you guys have been nominated for is Whole Y World, which is WHOL. WHY and then World WURLD, which I always read in my head like with some sort of slightly weird Southern American accent. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Sounds good.
But it's on. You first showed it at Carriage Works in Sydney.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's now being sort of shown in the Chartwell space, like all the other Walters nominations are. What I really love about the one in the Chartwell space is, yesterday when I went and had like a proper look at everybody's works, you've got this kind of platform that you walk up to and a sort of strange kind of spacey sci-fi sounds kind of playing in the air. Your drawings, Jess, are on the walls, and then you've got the screens with the animations in this kind of sort of round where people stand on. And when people are standing on that platform looking at those animations, they suddenly look really like freaky, like Sims or something. Like standing there staring at these screens. And I was like, whoa, it's like art literally, life literally imitating the art that you guys are making, which I think is such a weird, wonderful sort of way that's experienced.
Yeah, I think like something with the installations that we've done in the past, like we always kind of like to co-opt the audience into this like weird performative role. Like I like people to have to make a little investment when the like coming into an installation. So making them kind of walk up on that platform and then, they're being watched as being watchers. It's just something that's we talk about a lot when we're designing the installations and the experiences for people.
What sort of initiated the idea of the platform? Because it's quite like a distinct, interesting way of just separating the audience into kind of groups. Is it something you've been working with for a while, or is it for that show at Carriage Works?
I think that there's a few different things that I could talk about in relation to that, but perhaps for that particular work, when we wanted to make these several animations and we wanted to display them in some way, And I think from the start, we were very reluctant to just kind of have them on screens and put them beside each other and on a wall. I think, yeah, that would have changed the whole reading of them, where they become this kind of weird linear narrative or chapters in a work, whereas like presenting them in this that circular arrangement, it makes them all like non-hierarchical, and they're like these little portals into that, like window portals into that world where all the events are like taking place simultaneously to you know, our own point of time. There's a kind of like this repetitive motive or thing that we do in our animations and in my drawings as well, where it's like the loops and the Ouroboros and the circular kind of long cosmic cycle stuff that we incorporate a lot. So yeah, that's one part of that fed into why we did it like that.
I think that what I really like about it as well in that sense is the portal thing that you're saying. I think that's totally something that hits you first when you're looking at those works, because they're remarkably three-dimensional for something that's just on a screen. They're really like, they've got a lot of depth to them. So they, I think maybe it's the fact that they're sort of framed around the side. You've got the border around the edge, and then you've got all your sort of moving parts, like your weird fleshy people and your big sort of snakes and things like that, all give it like such depth. That is, I mean, your drawings are like that, Jess, as well, but Simon, that must be a lot of that comes in the animation side of things.
Yeah, trying to figure out how Jess's drawings work in a 3D space is kind of, I guess, the tricky part for me, or the kind of interesting part. Like, when you're kind of making a thing in the 3D program, it has to exist almost physically. Well, I guess I try to make it exist physically, so it is in a space. You could kind of walk into those drawings if they were in virtual reality, I guess. So trying to make the kind of different perspectives that exist in Jess's drawings work in a constructed way in 3D is a real kind of interesting.
I think my drawings, they don't really follow the laws of physics very well. I think I've got like a few tricks of perspective that I use, but yeah. I just, you know, I it's always this kind of, I'm trying to depict objects in space, but quite ineptly, because I'm not a computer. Then Simon trying to go from like my inept impossible spatial things, making that work in his real computer world is
makes it good though. The shapes, when you do start to see those shapes from different angles, they do look different to kind of regular squares. To make them, like from the front on camera, it might look like a square, but then around the sides, it might be like a crazy, I don't know, polygon kind of thing.
Is it do you, Jess, do you sort of produce a set of drawings then pass them on to you, Simon, or is it more of a back and forth?
I guess it works differently for different works that we've done. These ones in Whole Wide World, they were drawings that you'd already finished?
No, I had started them. I'd started them before we got to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And then we came up with we did like a exhibition and a residency in Edinburgh at the Talbot Rice Gallery in 2016. Yeah. And I think we came up with the idea for Whole Wide World then. And I'd done a couple of drawings. And then after Edinburgh, I went to Nebraska on like this 10-week thematic residency for artists working in the themes of science fiction. Mm-hmm. And that's when I produced the rest of the drawings for Whole Wide World. But like Simon said, it was quite a different way of working for this one, because then I sent those drawings sent the drawing scans to Simon.
And then each video was just created with the assets from those drawings.
Yeah, so you worked really specifically with just individual drawings for that one to animate the, you know, the central image. But in the past, on like our VR works, like how you describe that process?
More like a collage of a lot of different works. A lot of different objects coming together to create a different world that isn't a specific drawing.
Yeah, Simon's just got access to like my archive of like, you know, 7 years of drawing, and he can kind of create these, you know, his own narrative through the different scenes that I make in the drawing. Mm-hmm. So he like, you know, he fills in all of the all of the narrative scenes from drawing to drawing. So it's like gets filtered through his brain, and he like kind of you work with the narrative more.
You come in with the ideas and you come in with the story.
Yeah, mine are like these these like just little pinpoint animation stills, and he kind of
wraps them into something.
Photo versus a movie, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in the sound in the space, because it's like this kind of weird and sort of amazingly cheesy sort of sci-fi music. Yeah. And the thing I really like about it is every time you walk into the space, you feel like, oh, the songs or the sound is about to sort of arc and then move into the next bit, but it kind of just never gets there. It just keeps percolating in the middle bit of the track. How did the sound come about? Who made it? And why did you choose to have that in there?
The third like member of the third person that we work with is Andrew Clark, who I've been friends with him since early days in Christchurch, he's a sound composer, and he does the soundtracks for all of our video works. And that's like a really, really important part of the work, because, you know, it's like that creates the emotional hook line that can kind of take people on this journey as well. So it's incredibly integral with all of the projects that we do. And the piece that he made for Whole Wide World, it's like about, how long is it, 27 minutes?
It's quite long.
Yeah, so again, it just goes through these very long, gradual shifting cycles. It's really beautiful.
There's a great Twin Peaks-esque part of it.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of music, we might play a track and then come back and chat some more to Jess Johnson and Simon Ward, nominees for the Walters Prize this year. We're going to jump into The Situations with Stargazer. This is on the playlist, and remember, if you hear tracks that you like that are on the playlist, you can always vote for them in the 95 BFM Top 10. Number one this week is Molly with Bad Friend. Right now this is The Situations. I think they were in last week as well, but they've knocked out. You can always bring them back, guys. This is people power.
The Other's Way, or August 31st. Don't miss them.
Kid could do that. Art Bank on 95BFM.
That was Wax Chattels with In My Mouth, and you can catch them at The Others Way next weekend. And it's sold out, so sucks for you if you haven't got tickets. It just sold out yesterday, I think, actually. So that's exciting. It's always a good time, The Others Way Festival. But we're chatting to Jess Johnson and Simon Ward. Kia ora again, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Nominated for the Walters Prize this year, happening at the Auckland Art Gallery. And we've been talking about Whole Wide World, which is your project that's been nominated, and talk a bit about animation and collaboration. And we've just realised that Simon, you direct Aroha Bridge, which we love at BFM. Everybody loves Aroha Bridge.
Cool.
And you're saying it's coming out next year, is that right?
Yeah, we're kind of in the midst of the next series production. It's going to be quite a lot longer this time, like 6 half-an-hour episodes on Māori TV.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, Coco's been working very, very hard at the amazing stories, and yeah, we co-direct it, so it's like, yeah.
Very cool.
Working very hard.
Very, very cool. And Jess, you were saying as well that you've got a project coming up at the Christchurch Art Gallery quite soon too, is that right?
Yeah, we both do. Like, we come back for the awards dinner of the Walters Prize, which I think is maybe like the first week of November, and then we're going to head down to Christchurch and spend some time there. Simon's going to make some new videos that are going to be showing in the foyer, and I'm doing like this outdoor public artwork thing.
Cool, that sounds exciting. Theo, I know, was very keen to talk about some sci-fi.
Oh, yeah,
now.
I was just interested. We've kind of been touching on the fringes of the fact that there's all the sci-fi language, and also kind of the arcane horror. I'm curious, what is it kind of draws you into that field?
I think it's like sci-fi and like kind of highly fantastical other worlds and speculative worlds. Like, they're just what I've heavily consumed since I was a kid.
Growing up in a small town.
Yeah, yeah. It's just total escapism stuff. You know, you wanted to imagine different worlds beyond the, you know, relatively small one that surrounded me in Mount Maunganui. And you know, I got that through books and film, and yeah, like some early film that really got in there was like a Neverending Story was a really big one. And we kind of mined a lot of like our early influences in like the last project that we did just before this called Terminus, which had a lot of like a sort of filmic references.
Yeah, we got to pull our favourite bits out of a lot of different films and then kind of create them in Jess's world in virtual reality, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah, like the Sphinxes from Neverending Story, and it was like the nightmare boat ride from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. We kind of made our own version of that, but you were travelling through the belly of a giant worm.
Oh my god.
But yeah, like there were certain books that I read like in my late teens and early 20s that, you know, I think they're just incredibly formative in how I think about reality or think about the world or the future or, you know, social orders and stuff like that. So yeah, like the title of this piece, Whole Wide World, it's not a direct reference, but there was this book called Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban. And that's, you know, it's written entirely in this like kind of made up language, and takes place in this like post-apocalyptic landscape where there's, you know, it's peppered with like the artifacts of the civilization that came before, like our civilization. And it's these like little kind of feudal village systems. And just, you know, the language has been reformed at the same time that society is growing again. I think like the way that I treat language in my world as well, it's like at the same time that I'm growing this world, the language is having to form at the same time. So they kind of like take these concurrent tangents.
I always like the thing in Mad Max where it's only like 20 years after the apocalypse, but everyone's forgotten how to speak. Like, we just repeat words now.
That's like this. That's a real common trope. Hey, is like when in the future language they just go, it's bright.
Yeah. And it doesn't just make any sense, but they're just like, we'll stick with it. It's been done in one movie. We'll do it in all of them.
Yeah.
Commitment to a language that they've invented is good though. It's good.
Yeah. Is Dune a big sort of influence on this?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. I think, our first, like, a couple of our projects, their titles are direct Dune references. Our first video animation that we made together was called Mnemonic Pulse. I think that was like a
device?
It was a device in the Dune universe, which I think was used to imprint information in other people's brains. And then Ixion Gate, which was our first virtual reality project that we made, that was a reference to the planet Ix in the Dune universe, and they were like the supreme masters in technology who supplied all the technology to the rest of the Imperium. That's I think our last couple of projects, I don't think they've kind of drifted away from right. the Dune Dune universe.
Worms, but
yeah. And the worms. Yeah.
You have how many of those books are there? Like six? And then each one is densely packed with things just changing every couple of paragraphs. So if you just take every item in it and poured it into a big pile, it would be as big as the world.
Yeah.
There's so much material. Each thing could be dug into entirely just on its own.
Yeah, and I think like the aspect of how like technology is treated in the Dune universe, I think that's what I was kind of most attracted to, where it's kind of this like quite archaic idea of technology where... I've forgotten all the language around it, but it was technology isn't allowed to do. Do you know this bit that I'm talking about? It's something where you can only use technology to like enhance human abilities. Oh, you can't use it to like replace human thought. Mm-hmm. So it's like the way that we deal with technology, where we let our phones do all the thinking for us, you know, and they're like, we've just offloaded all of the work to them. Mm. There's like a law in the Dune universe where you can only use it to like enhance
existing capability.
Yeah. So it's this kind of expansion of consciousness and like
it's like a strange kind of very specific idea of technology that feels very rooted in when the books were written, but also it's still kind of a relevant conversation, and it still has that kind of, it's like, you know, there's all the kind of media theory of the 60s talking about how technology will extend. In some ways, it completely predicts how reliant we are. In other ways, it just misses the kind of key, you know, the idea of deep thought and those kind of key changes.
Mm. It's very, like, to come back into the, like, space of the gallery as well, it is very textual in that, like, the language of sci-fi is very present in the space and in the sound and the visuals and everything. But it is really interesting because it did... Yeah, it did bring up, when you walk into the sort of area, it did bring up all those references kind of in your head, all those things that sort of deep from your childhood watching. Like, for me, it was like a lot of Doctor Who, and it's a very different kind of a, like, universe sort of thing. But that sort of weird alien, it's just around the corner, you know? Like, that portal will take you there. You just need to find the door that will, like, open into that. It is that sort of atmosphere in that room, which I think is really it's really interesting, because it sort of percolates in people's imaginations a lot, but we don't think about it necessarily so directly. So I really enjoyed that about the work, because it brings that straight into the way you're experiencing it. Mm. But, yeah, so the whole wide world, that's on at the Auckland Art Gallery as part of the Walters Prize. It's what you're nominated for, Jess Johnson and Simon Ward. Thank you so much for coming up and chatting to us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
And it's beautiful and sunny, so I hope you guys go and catch a bit of sunshine before this afternoon, 2 p.m. at the Auckland Art Gallery in the Chartwell. In the Chartwell area, there is going to be a chat from all the artists. So also Patti Tyrell and Jacqueline Fraser will be there too, plus Ruth, who we spoke to earlier. And you guys will all be talking about your works in situ with Natasha Conland, the curator, as well, which is exciting. It's really cool. So head along to that, BFM listeners. It's a good one. And you're not going to get all these people in the same space that often, so it's a good one to go and check out.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.